This is the fourth session in our series, The Laws of Life. Our topic tonight is the law of freedom. Our question is, what is the divine law of freedom, and how can aspirants best harness it? I've shuffled the cards and laid out the spread, and the spread is as follows. The starting point is the Seven of Pentacles, right side up. The counterpoint is the Nine of Pentacles, upside down. The creative challenge is the King of Rods, right upside down.
That's
the King. What? Yeah, that's the King. The purpose is the Two of Rods, right side up. The endowment is the Two of Swords, right side up. The destiny is the Ace of Cups, right side up.
That's upside down.
As I said, the Ace of Cups, upside down. The real question is the Knight of Rods, upside down. The unseen forces, the Hierophant, right side up. That's number five in the Major Arcana. The spiritual ideal is Temperance, right side up. The 14th card in the Major Arcana, making it another five, two fives in a row. The culmination is the Ten of Rods, upside down. So we have five upright and five reverse cards. We have two majors, the Hierophant and Temperance, both fives. We have one sword, the four rods, one cup, and two pentacles. So there's clearly a preference here for rods. This is a law that influences consciousness and its nature, and how it interacts with form, the pentacles. So in addition to that, Rose checked, and we found that the Two of Swords appeared in the last session on sacrifice, when it was the real question. No.
There were also five rods.
Oh, there were five rods in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've just got rods all over the place. And also, the Knight of Rods appeared in the very first session we did on fulfillment. And in fact, sacrifice and fulfillment are both aspects of the law of freedom. And so that's an interesting tangent there. All right. In looking at this spread over in its entirety, the most notable thing that struck me was the Two of Swords and the Major Arcana of the Temperance. The Two of Swords, she's blindfolded. She's got those two swords going up into heaven, and in front of it is half of the card is filled with all that residue of ancient evil. The Temperance, instead of two swords, it's the two wings that go up to the top of the card and draw in divine energy. And Temperance is an angelic force that transforms negative energy into positive energy, redeems life, redeems matter. And you can see in the background, especially down in the lower left and lower right-hand corners, all that honeycomb, and in the center, all that honeycomb effect, which indicates transmuted evil, transmuted ancient evil, the nature of form transmuted. We see that again in the Knight of Rods in the lower corner, and in some of the other cards it's less noticeable. But these two cards are kind of like the bookends here. The Two of Swords clearly indicates that we're dealing with very, very ancient elements here. And somehow the notion of freedom, the principle of freedom, the law of freedom, enables us to liberate consciousness from its prison in form. And we'll talk about that as we go through. And temperance is the method by which we do this. Hence, you could consider active meditation to be active freedom. You could call it that. It's a course in freeing yourself and liberating yourself from suffering, from ignorance, from irrelevance. And that meditation is that, because all of the techniques of active meditation are designed to do exactly what temperance symbolizes. We transform energy. We transform negative emotion into positive emotion. We transform ignorance and falsehood into truth and reality. We transform the nature of form and enlighten it and enable it to become the servant of the soul. So with that background, I want to, I think that lays the groundwork for this particular spread. So let's go back to the beginning, always a good place. We have the Seven of Pentacles, and the Seven of Pentacles is a person, and with a pet duck, and then this big, massive forest in the background, trees or whatever. And as most of you will recognize, the person represents the soul, the duck represents the personality, and the big tree, the big gray mass with all those pentacles, represents mass consciousness, or the whole human family. So we are a point of light within a ocean of life. Our own life exists along with many, many other points of light. And here we have the great triangle of human expression. We, like many, many other people, are awakened as we grow up to find that we are imprisoned in matter. Consciousness is imprisoned in matter. And what are we going to do about it? How do we discover what the purpose is and so on? So this sets the stage. Now, it also gives us a lot of clues about the nature of freedom. Because if we feel overwhelmed by life, we can't be free. Our sense of being overwhelmed replaces our capacity to be liberated. If we look around for somebody to blame for our own inabilities, our own lack of accomplishment, our own sense of despair or grief, and say it's all their fault, we can't be free. You see, this is the dynamic here. This is a triangle between the soul, the personality, and them being the representative of mass consciousness or the rest of humanity. And so if we say, I would have gotten an education, but they didn't let me, then we're putting ourselves in a position where we can't achieve freedom. If we feel lost here on earth, we can't experience freedom. We can't set ourselves free. Now, this is brings up then exactly what is our definition of freedom. And I must say right off the top that this is possibly the most esoteric law that we will talk about. Because according to the Tibetan, DK, the law of freedom is not really the name of the law. But there's no words in English or any other language to represent the true nature of freedom, which he says comes to us from Sirius. I'm serious about this. And It's just beginning to dawn in the consciousness of advanced humanity as to what freedom really is. Well, of course, he was writing some 70, 80 years ago, so we might have made an inch or two of progress since then, probably not, but we might have. Back in the 30s, Roosevelt described the four freedoms as freedom from want and freedom from hunger and things like that. Freedoms from. And a lot of people think that freedom from having to pay your gas bill and freedom from having to pay for your groceries and freedom from your mortgage are wonderful aspects of freedom. But of course, then we also have the fact that the freedom is defined in our Constitution and by the great thinkers of America, the American experience, is very much different. It's freedom to do things. It's the freedom of self-expression. We are free to speak our mind. We are free to worship as we choose. We are free to make choices. We are free to vote for one guy or the other guy. We are free to take care of ourselves. We are free to fulfill our responsibilities. And so you have this dichotomy here. We're either seeking freedom from others or freedom from responsibility, or we're seeking freedom to be responsible, to live our own life. And that's basically the way we've approached this. But tonight I want to introduce a new concept of freedom, which I think goes some distance to helping us understand freedom as a mental energy that cometh from Sirius. And that's the freedom to grow. Look at the Seven of Pentacles. That's a tree representing mass consciousness. In its cousin here, the Nine of Pentacles, there's the vineyard and the tree. I am the vine, ye are the branches. So this enunciates the freedom to grow, the freedom to become, to excel, the freedom to exceed expectations, the freedom to break down limitations, the freedom to do what was never expected of us. The freedom to shine, the freedom to be brilliant, the freedom to grow. And this is inextricably tied in with the concept of growth and development at a spiritual level. It takes us beyond what we are now. All right, so maybe we are trapped in a residue of ancient evil. There's nothing stopping us from discovering our inner self and learning to use divine force to transform that ancient evil into modern helpfulness, modern affirmation. And in doing that, we've exceeded our design. We've certainly exceeded what everybody else has thought about us, and we've exceeded what we thought about us. We exceeded even the divine design. We are designed in such a way that the true essence of freedom is living up to our design. But then if we can actually go beyond our design and improve even on that, that's the freedom coming from Sirius, as best I can tell. All right, so we don't want to be overwhelmed by mass consciousness. We don't even want to be in a homeostatic relationship with mass consciousness. We want to become a conduit through which the soul can pour its angelic force, the force of temperance, into the form world, lifetime after lifetime, to redeem and enlighten the substance of matter. This idea is then reinforced with the second card, the Nine of Pentacles. The Nine of Pentacles is a similar person as was in the Seven, cloaked here, with a pet bird. We've gone from a duck to a bird of paradise.
They're very similar.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're very similar.
Hmm.
And then there's the vineyard and the tree in the background indicating growth. But the real dynamic about this card, the Nine of Pentacles, is the circle or the loop created by the upflowing energy of the form of the bird coming up to the face and then coming back down through the pentacles to create a loop. If you can see that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the involution and evolutionary arc. The person, the soul, invests in life on Earth. The personality grows in the bird, grows in skill and talent and capacity, and brings it back up to the level of the soul. And this describes, these two arcs, involution and evolution, describe the whole process of growth which transforms the substance of Earth and liberates consciousness trapped in form. And in fact, one could say that the basic design of life on Earth is that consciousness descends into the trap and then burns its way out and establishes liberation. If you read the the Ged series, Sparrowhawk, the Earthsea Trilogy, which became a quadrilogy, the Earthsea Trilogy, that's the theme of this, and Ged is the magician that searches for the severed ring and puts the two halves back together again. Literally, that's what we're doing. The severed ring is the disconnect between the personality and the soul, and our job is to reconnect these two things, reunite them, synthesize them, and the result is a tremendous outburst of growth. So what we're examining here in this card is the principle that what gets trapped in substance is liberated through freedom. That's the law of freedom. Whatever gets trapped, anything divine that gets trapped in form, will end up liberating both itself and the form it occupies. Now, when you stop and think about that, that's one heck of a dynamic principle. That's the law of life, even if we've never even thought about it before. The law of life is that whenever consciousness is trapped in form, it is capable of transforming itself, yes, over many eons, to liberate itself from that trap and redeem form at the same time. Think of that. That's a remarkable secret, a remarkable principle. And that's one of the founding, central, most esoteric principles of our life. What this means is that there's no limit to what we can do. There may be a limit to what a personality can do because we live 70 or 80 years, and then that's the end of that lifetime. But there's no limit to what the soul can do and how the soul can serve. And this is reflected in the whole design of life. All right, going on, we come to the challenge, the King of Rods upside down. And this is your typical king card. He looks very magisterial and authoritative, looking into the future. Got his little intuitive beanie on, and he has a clear focus on the goal ahead of him. This is basically just the statement of the ideal principle of the mind, wisdom. The inherent innate characteristic of freedom is wisdom. This is all happening through the ability of the mind to invest itself in the form, create elaborate forms of, that can be something of an automaton, and then withdraw on a cyclic basis, always keeping its eye on the goal being freedom. And that freedom is known in advance. This is not a cliffhanger. Will it occur or not? The only question is, how long will the personality struggle with suffering and ignorance before it discovers the secret of freedom? So we could sum up this card with the simple statement, the mind rules. And when the mind rules, we have the capacity to achieve freedom. Now, keep in mind that the normal understanding of freedom in humanity is, the word basically comes from Anglo-Saxon words, and not slave, free man, freedom, free man. Unenslaved. And of course that struggle to free citizens of England, for example, from the monarchical rule, freedom, the struggle to free nations from the rule of others, is one that is very symbolic of and speaks to the mindset of humanity. But we've come a long way from that very, very crude definition of freedom, and yet it's the freedom to think for ourselves. It's wherever the mind begins to develop, freedom can flourish. This is a corollary to the law of freedom. In order for freedom to develop, the mind must flourish. This was not something that could be developed during Atlantis, because Atlantis was a period of time for developing the emotions. But now, as more and more people are learning to use the mind, freedom can flourish. Not without setbacks, of course, but there you have it. So the key is the mind rules, and the mind rules with a sense of its innate design of nobility and dignity. We then come down to the card of purpose here, the Two of Rods. This is our second rod. And here, we're at the opposite end. We have a neophyte thinker, if you wish, holding a globe, a circle of wholeness, and two rods, the duality of life, and discovering the need to reconcile the duality of life in order to create a sense of wholeness. So this is the underlying purpose, that we need to unite consciousness that's been trapped in form with consciousness that remains free above the mean, and then harness the two to go beyond known limits. Well, this is what DK demonstrates so remarkably in the blue books, the Alice Bailey books. He's constantly, here's somebody that is a little further along the path than the rest of us, but has developed a mind to be able to penetrate to the meaning of life on Sirius, the meaning of consciousness. And what he's done is exactly what I've been teaching you all. constantly trace ideas back to their source. Well, we're a little bit limited. We can trace an idea back to Plato or to Descartes or to whatever. But our involvement in form limits us to the earth plane. We don't yet have the ability to, like Descartes, examine the various signs of the zodiac and write esoteric astrology. Well, maybe we have it to a small degree with forces of the zodiac, but not to the level of detail and insight. Nor do we have the ability to project our mind into the heart of Sirius and be in communication with the mothership there. So these are things that lie ahead of us, but he's done this. He and the other masters have done this, demonstrated the incredible ability of the mind to find wholeness and synthesis where we only find conflict and disparity. All right. Before I go any further, I want to pause for a moment. And any comments or questions so far? Anybody? I've freed you from mute.
Carl, could you talk a little bit about when you referred to Sirius?
Well, I'm not Sirius. No.
Need to mute that.
Yeah, let me put the mute back on because I'm getting an echo here. Sirius is it's been a long time since I took astronomy. It's one of those stars up, constellations. The dog star is part of it, I think. But it's part of a constellation. And it's really the center of, let's put it this way. Our personality is to the soul as what we call God is to Sirius. Sirius is the inner being, not the planet, not the dirt. But the consciousness that inhabits Sirius is responsible for this whole nook of the solar system. Not the entire Milky Way, that's rather vast. But for our little corner of the Milky Way, Sirius is the center of consciousness. DK refers to the entity that incarnates through Sirius as the one about whom naught can be said. Therefore, I have nothing more to say, except that Dr. Lichtman and I lovingly refer to the one about whom naught can be said as Irving. We have this immense sense of shame that we can't use an actual name to refer to him, so we invented Irving for him. I'm sure he appreciates that. Anyway, it's just, if you want to think of it, it's God's God. It's the inner dimensions of our divine life, what we would construe as God. Okay. Did that answer your question, or do you want more?
No, that was great. Thank you.
One of the implications of what I've just said, of course, is that when I mentioned that the law of freedom is actually a principle that comes from Sirius, that should awaken little bells and whistles in your brain, in your consciousness, in your thinking, because it means that our life and our struggles down here are rooted in a galaxy far, far away. Well, it's the same galaxy, but in a constellation far, far away. Not even one of the constellations of the zodiac. So there is great purpose there, and we've evolved far enough to be able to, even though the Tibetan insists that freedom is not quite the right word here, we're able to progress. We've progressed far enough to be able to start talking about what this word freedom really represents. Okay, anyone else before I go on? Well, all right. I will push forward. The card of endowment is the Two of Swords. And as I've already suggested, what is notable about this card is not the blindfold or the hair, the two swords sticking up into heaven like rabbit ear antennae. It's the monolithic forms in the lower half of the card, representing ancient evil. This is the card of the endowment. In a sense, we need to look at this and say, the imperfections of substance itself is our endowment. It is our home into which the soul projects its own life and consciousness, lets it be trapped so that we can figure out how to redeem it and escape from it and liberate not only it, but ourselves as well, thereby accomplishing God's purpose. And again, you've heard me talk about this many, many eons ago, and God asked for volunteers, and the human race was distracted at that moment, and the angels all stepped backwards a ways, and we stayed where we were, and God said, oh, thank you for volunteering, for stepping forward. Mm-hmm. And so since that time, we've been incarnating into dense form, where we experience ignorance and selfishness and limitation, and we try to figure out how to escape these limitations and become free. And so in a dynamic way, the work of humanity is to achieve the freedom to grow. Through growth, freedom. This is part of our DNA, part of our basic design, our fundamental design. Through freeing ourselves, we grow. As we grow, we free ourselves. And so this means that one of the meanings of the law of freedom is it's the freedom to leave the past behind. The freedom to leave the past behind. Now think on that. Ponder on that. This is a stupendous idea. It can be life-changing. You don't have to continue to grieve over what you've lost in the past or what you perceive to lose or some humiliation from when you were 16. I mean, just being 16 is humiliating enough. We are designed to leave the past behind, to move into the future. Otherwise, if you let your consciousness be focused on the past and shudder every time you recall it, you are imprisoning your consciousness in the past. Now, it's not just what we've experienced in this lifetime or other lifetimes that we have to leave behind. Consciousness was already trapped in form when we arrived on the scene. So it's not just our humiliations. It's hard to say what caused all this ancient evil. There are hints throughout the writings of Alice Bailey, there, including the fact that there are planetary beings, not physical, but astral and mental, that have attached themselves to the physical Earth that create patterns of cruelty and violence. And these are forces that none of us individually are designed to take on, but we can take them on as they are trapped in or have conditioned the patterns of ancient evil, the residue. And so as we grow out of these limitations and learn to contact the soul and use its power, as we've described in active meditation, to transmute negativity, depression, gloom, pessimism, cruelty, violence, etc., into love, joy, harmony, and peace, we are fulfilling our design. And you can think about that. It doesn't matter what level anybody rises to. They can always do better. I mean, you can make it your goal to rise up out of your share of pessimism. Well, once you've learned how to do that, why stop there? Why not learn to enrich life with optimism? So those of you who have been studying with me for a while, you don't even recognize the difference. But we have the ability not just to transform what is imprisoned in substance, but then to let our point of light become a beacon to transmit blessings, all kinds of liberation, all kinds of purity, all manner of beauty, etc., into the world of form. Think of the stunning accomplishment of Shakespeare's plays, or Beethoven's symphonies, or the artwork of Salvador Dali. These are stunning achievements that go far beyond just liberating the trapped consciousness in form. We are civilizing the earth plane. We are putting God's laws to work. And this is all part of the work of freedom. We are freeing the nuclear potential of energy. We are freeing the basic design of oil. We are freeing the capacity of an acre of ground to produce more and more corn and grapes and whatever it might be. We are freeing the substance of earth in ways that go shatter our imagination. It would be unheard of, unthinkable to somebody from 400 or 500 years ago. Okay, then we move over to the card of destiny, and we have the Ace of Cups. The Ace of Cups is our cup standing on top of the lotus bed, radiating, the sun coming up out of the cup, radiating its light. And I don't have a whole lot to say here. I'll probably go in 20 minutes now, but don't have a whole lot to say here, except that this card means that we are free to fulfill our design. This is where we come back to the idea of in the first session, we studied the law of fulfillment, and the real question was the Knight of Rods, which we've already talked about as the challenge here. Well, in terms of the Knight of Rods, the real question then, in terms of fulfillment, is not that we're looking for fulfillment for ourselves, but what does it mean to fulfill our design? What does it mean to express Christ-like love? What does it mean to capture beauty and express it in everything we do? What does it mean to embody forgiveness? What does it mean to be an agent of freedom, not just as an American, but as a citizen of the world? All right, so it's by fulfilling our design. First of all, we use our mind, going back to the Knight of Rods, we use our mind to discern what our design as a human being is. I think we can pretty well decide we're not a fern, we're not a pussycat, or a dog. We might love dogs and putty cats, but we're not weeds, we're not worms, we're human beings. And human beings can develop the mind and explore whatever resonates most deeply with that human being. Very few people bother to do this. Most people are out looking for happiness so they can live happily ever after. But we have a design. We have a basic human nature with great talents, great skills, great potentials, and we need to, first of all, define what that is. But then, once we define that, and we've already done that largely in terms of our real work on Earth, our real mission on Earth, is to rediscover our consciousness of our inner life and use it to liberate the part of consciousness which has been trapped in ignorance and selfishness. So we've learned that much. We've established that much. But now, what does it mean to exceed our design? What does it mean to not only fulfill our responsibility, but to define an entirely new level of responsiveness, as in responsiveness to Sirius, or responsiveness to some other divine force, responsiveness to the ashram, responsiveness to the hierarchy, responsiveness to the plan of God? What does that mean? Well, I can't sit here and answer all that question for you. This is something that each of us has to take on as an assignment, as a challenge, as a something that we need to sally forth or venture forth and discover. But here we are, the Ace of Cups. The cup is standing on a pond of lotuses or lilies, water lilies, standing on a pond. We have built our capacity to radiate light on the muck of life. And the symbolism here is that the lotus or the lily, the roots go down to the soil at the bottom of the lily pond and connect itself there, and they draw nutrition out of the soil, out of the muck, and create this flower of beauty. And we're meant to do that too, because we're a point of light that's meant to radiate our light and share the light of the soul, the light of archetypal wisdom, the light of the mind with everybody, anyone we can illuminate. We don't have to teach, but through our work, we invest our creative light into, and it's not our creative light, it's divine light, but we invest this divine light into what we do through our relationships, through our sense of calm and poise, through our constant aspiration for the very best, our drive to excel, to exceed what is expected of us. And there's nobody on Earth that can define what that design is. It's the soul that has a sense of the divine design. And the purpose of the soul and the personality is to create a companionship which routinely, daily, exceeds its design. Okay, again, I'm going to pause here, unmute. Take any further questions that might have, hit the wrong one. Anybody have any questions or comments before I move on to the pillar of revelation?
Carl, I'm just thinking about your comments on exceeding the design. So it's even hard to ask a question about it because, I mean, we would probably, the plan of God or whatever, it's so...
It's your design to ask questions about it.
Well, it would be so creative. That freedom, there is no limit, and it'll be just continuing for eternity to expand and go beyond whatever limit.
Isn't that wonderful?
There is no limit.
That's right.
All right.
Limit is a concept of form. It has no, there is no word limit when it comes to above the mean. So this is the law of freedom, you see. Once you touch the law of freedom, it's the freedom to go beyond your design. That's a real creative input when you stop and think about it. Who else? Other comments or questions?
Well, I was thinking of the words, and these works and even greater than these you will do.
Absolutely. That's the spirit. Anybody else? All right, I'm going to remute here. And we'll talk about the Pillar of Revelation. Pillar of Revelation starts with the seventh position, the real question. And tonight we have the Knight of Rods upside down, occupying this position. And we have seen him before, right? Is that the one? Yeah, I think so. Anyway, the question here is, we're talking about somebody that's working with the mind and has learned the basic skills of thinking concretely and abstractly. A member of humanity. And so the question here is, what is the origin of what we are learning? What is the origin of our limits? That's a better way to put it. It's easy to define our limits. What's the origin of them? Who put those limits there? Did we put them there? If so, we have the authority to take them down. Did God put them there? If so, for what purpose? Some people would answer this question, what's the origin of our limits, and say, well, discrimination. I've been discriminated against. It's not fair. I demand fairness. Well, that's initiating a whole new loop in the world of suffering. Other people might say, what limits me? Well, it's disappointment. Other people have been so disappointing to me. And that's, if I had only, you know, if I had only been born in as the son of George Romney, I would have been able to make something of myself. The second aspect of this question then is, what liberates us? And that's the real question. What liberates us? It's never any of these forces that limit us. There is no way to overcome a limitation with other limited forces. There's no amount of money that can liberate you from your inertia. There's no amount of good luck that can liberate you from your lack of achievement. The force that liberates us is spirit. The design. It's the design that liberates us. Understand. For example, you can all relate to this in terms of the rays. I think everybody taking this session knows what their soul ray is. Those of you who have a ray 7 soul ray influence, that explains why you're incarnating at this time. Because ray 7 is coming into manifestation. Now, you don't have to have a ray 7 soul in order to manifest now. Ray 3 is always a manifestation. Ray 2 is always around. But the point is that we discover our design by learning to respond to the residence of our ray, specifically the soul ray and also the personality ray. And once you grow up and you be, you know, at the age of 25 or 30 or 35 or 40, you are fortunate enough to find out what your soul ray is. It explains a lot of things, but you can't go back and ask for a different ray. It would be pointless. Your whole reason for being here is to fulfill some purpose of your ray, of your soul ray. And so going back to headquarters and saying, I don't like being ray 8, is absurd. It's an absurdity. You're missing the whole point. So I'm getting back to this. It's our design that liberates us. It's not our design that limits us. It's our design that liberates us. And those of you who struggle against the basic design of your psychology and wish to deny it or wish to change it, you're just digging yourself in deeper. You're putting up too much fuss that will keep you from recognizing what it is, what we're designed to do. We're not designed to become some outstanding personality. That might happen once or twice. We're designed to fulfill the needs of the soul, the intent of the soul. So the real question is, what liberates us? We're talking about the law of freedom. The law of freedom guarantees that as we awaken and find ourselves trapped in form, we are able to find a force in consciousness to liberate us. Okay, we go on then to the hidden forces, position number 8, and here we have our first major card, the Hierophant, the keeper of the seekers, the symbolized by those keys, the guardian of arcane knowledge. And the Hierophant is a kind of a Chinese fellow wearing a pagoda on his head. And what this means is that when you go back and seek the origin, in the expectation of finding what will liberate you, this is done on the inner levels. It is your own soul that becomes the Hierophant. And you have to learn that everything that's happening in your life is happening from the inner level flowing to the outer level. And you're here on earth to become a force of beatitude and enrichment. So you want to line yourself up so that you are the outer expression of the inner power of blessing of the Hierophant. Freedom is our tool for learning to liberate substance, the power within substance. It happens through consciousness, not form. It happens as we trace ideas back to their origin, tap their original power, go beyond the limits of Earth whenever necessary, in fact, whenever possible, and align ourselves with the will of God to bring this insight and enrichment into physical life through our life. We are designed to go beyond these limits. Again, this is a nesting idea where the tables all nest within one another, or the bowls all nest within one another. Well, we tap an ever-expanding sense of awareness and consciousness by going beyond what seems to limit us and recognizing that there's something beyond that horizon, something beyond our current knowledge, something greater. And we're always looking for that something greater. That's the hidden source here. We go to the Next card, the spiritual ideal, and we have temperance, which is also a five. And we discover that what we're free to do is we're free to redeem. We're free to liberate. We're free to turn the key that lets the prisoners out. Again, as I suggested earlier, we are free to grow. We are free to burst beyond the limits that everybody expects of us and we expect of ourselves. This is all about enlightenment. Going back to the light pouring forth from the cup in the Ace of Cups, this is all about our work transmuting the substance of earth. We are here to liberate one another. We are here to liberate the power of the raw substances of earth. We are here to refine and cultivate a progressively better expression of the focus of our consciousness. And the angels are here to do this with us. So we have much that we can learn about this as we move forward in creating new understanding, new growth. And this leads us then to the final card, the fulfillment, the Ten of Rods. And this is the ability to concentrate our awareness, our mental force, into a focused point and get things done into a pattern, we organize substance, we don't just have our head in the clouds of spirit with our feet on earth. We are the antenna of the Two of Swords. We are the dynamic conduit by which this ever-expanding scope of consciousness is able to come bursting into our life and free us from our glamours, free us from our illusions, free us from our blind spots, free us from the assumptions of the past. Again, think of something as simple as the current discussion of, well, Thomas Jefferson wasn't quite the superhuman founding father that we make him out to be. He had slaves. And he didn't let his slaves free until he died. He did liberate some of them at that point. Isn't this a nasty stain on Thomas Jefferson? Well, absolutely not. He lived in a time when, and in a part of the country where slavery was a tradition, and he took care of his slaves well and treated them as human beings and set the bedrock, set the foundation for the ultimate liberation of slaves. But we tend to get so fixated on tiny little distinctions like that, and we forget. It's one thing to look back 240 years and say, well, why didn't he act differently? Because we have the advantage of 240 years of human growth beyond the limitations that somebody like Jefferson had to live with and contend with. And so to go back and say, well, why didn't Jesus show up for the Sermon on the Mount flying in an airplane? I mean, this is, it's as rational or as sensible. That wouldn't have been understood by the people. It might have been possible to do, but it wouldn't have been understood. He would have driven everybody away in fright, and he would have had no audience. Today, it would seem perfectly reasonable. But we can't go back and pretend that things were the same way they are today as they are today 200, 300, 1,000 years ago. We need to look at this and see the immense progress humanity has made in breaking down limitations, discovering all kinds of things, getting sovereignty over the air and the water and the earth. We're able to drill down miles into the earth to obtain oil. And these things progress. So this is a symbol for the true freedom, the freedom to grow, the freedom to exceed our wildest expectations, to the freedom to exceed the designs of God. But to get there, we have to fulfill the design of God first. Okay, any comments or questions? It's your turn to ask questions. Anybody?
I like that card, Carl, the Ten of Rods. Just the forward push, and it's head first, and there's so much energy focused.
Sure. That's what we're down here to do. We're down here to be a point of tension that gets things done. Who else? Ultimately, this is the freedom to live in the midst of evil and imperfection and not be affected by it. It's the freedom to understand the benevolent nature of death. It's the freedom to pull away from form, the true meaning of detachment. Oh, that's right. There's a seminar coming up on the practice of detachment. Detachment leads to freedom. And this is the principle of detachment is an active principle of the law of freedom here on earth. Other comments or questions?
So much to think about. I just had the sense, it was interesting, after work today, and I didn't know where it was coming from. I never felt such heaviness, and I couldn't quite put a finger on it, but it was a perfect setup for everything you talked about tonight. So everything, when we feel that sense of limitation, and truly all of society is trying to teach you to feel limited.
Oh, yeah.
In our society, it's ridiculous. But we should have that sense of, oh boy, what a fabulous opportunity I've got right now to exercise what I know to do.
And right. Very good. Anybody else? Well, that's it for this session. Take what you've heard and ponder on that and discover the real dynamic law of freedom. Thank you and good night.